Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Sam Smith, writer for the Chicago Tribune for over 20-plus years, writer now at Bulls.com, author, of course, of The Jordan Rules. He joins us, as he did a couple weeks ago. Sam, so good to have you on the show again.
Jordan come out with another documentary?
Not quite yet, but a Game 6 movie. Okay. Before we get into the Last Dance documentary that you are a star in, I want to ask you about ESPN's all-time starting five for the Chicago Bulls. We're just discussing the Warriors starting five and a lot of different lineups here. ESPN had Derrick Rose as a point guard, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Artis Gilmore. Is that accurate in your opinion?
No, definitely not Rodman, right? Rodman wouldn't even be, top five, maybe. Tony Kukoc, I know Dennis was a spectacular figure, erratic in most, but Tony Kukoc was probably more valuable at power forward, even though he was a point guard, than Dennis was. Dennis had great, a couple of great series, which he sort of made himself the focus of events, obviously, by wrestling Karl Malone or Shaq to the ground. What you don't remember is those first two seasons, 96 and 97 titles, he missed like 50 games. He was suspended 11, I think, one time for kicking the guy, and then he headbutted the ref. He suspended 6 or 7 for that one, got hurt a couple of times. So Dennis wasn't there. And Horace in the first three was much more in the Chet Walker, who's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
In the early 70s, was far, far more valuable than Dennis ever was, for the Bulls didn't win any titles then. But, that was the first great run in the early 70s, sort of like the Warriors with Jamal in the 70s or Rick Barry, by the way, who to me is the most underrated player in the history of the NBA. Rick Barry's like a top 10 all-time player, or top 15 at worst. And I see these lists, and I didn't mention Rick. You can't believe how great. I remember Rick and his coming in his prime, how great a player he was. He got messed up with going jumping back and forth, the ABA, and suspended. But his talents were, he's like better than Larry Bird. Rick was an amazing player. But Dennis is fabulously overrated at that period in time when he was with the Bulls. So if you're looking at the Bulls' all-time greats, Dennis not even top five to me at power forward.
Interesting. Hey Sam, let me ask you this, because the last the last half of the Last Dance, it really hit home how, whatever word you want to say, competitive Jordan was, vindictive, petty, nasty. Did he ever try to stick it to you? Or did he ever not talk to you, or did he ever try to demean you like he did, like with Jerry Krause and other guys?
No, it really didn't. And he had plenty of reason in his view. 30 years later now, he sort of copped to the whole thing and agreed and admitted everything, basically what I wrote was accurate. But it's okay. It took 28 or 29 years to get around to it, but But I like Michael a lot, and I got along with him well. And, you know, when the book came out in 91, the end of 91, it was controversial in the sense that, you know, it depicted Jordan as now he's depicted himself, tough on teammates, you know, sometimes bullying, but, you know, for a reason, you know, pushing guys, leadership, you know, all the things he's talked about. But I give him a lot of credit, and I think that's, you know, it shows a lot about his character and humanity, basic humanity, despite what, you know, some of the players might say he lacked in their relations with him. But after the book came out, it was a sensation, not so much, you know, to me necessarily, because I was kind of under siege. But I'm still on the beat. I work for the Chicago Tribune, and I'm still around the team, and I intended to be. That was my main job. You know, the book wasn't supposed to be a new career or anything that was going to be that spectacular or successful. Because when I started it, the Bulls were just, you know, a team that kept losing to the Pistons. I mean, that's why I still so mad at Isaiah, because Isaiah beat him more than he beat Isaiah. But anyway, so I would be at all the press conferences, and, you know, I used to have a good kind of informal relationship with him, just chatting. I stopped that. I didn't even try to do that. It would have been inappropriate. But he answered me just like he would any other, you know, during, in the midst of all that, answered me like any other reporter. A lot of times he would say, "Oh yes, Sam, good point." And he was always great. And I'm all grateful to him for that, because, you know, and in this era, you see Russell Westbrook with his immature, puerile behavior. Next question, and Kevin Durant gets up, you know, offended if somebody criticizes him on Twitter and doesn't talk to guys. You know, Michael was never like that at all. He understood his place in the game, what he meant, good character and upbringing, you know, strong individual person. And what he represented to the league, and he felt a responsibility to that. And so he always treated me, you know, professionally, and that's really all I asked.
Sam, Michael Jordan's the GOAT to me. So The Last Dance delivered, and I feel like I heard Horace Grant say, I don't know if it's a documentary, I don't know what it is, and he's not the only one. So I don't know what people expected, but we were talking yesterday, and I want to ask you this. And Scottie Pippen's on record as saying, I guess he's not happy how he was portrayed. But I thought about this yesterday with the fellas. Why do you feel that Michael or whoever felt compelled to bring up Scottie not going into the game, the playoff game, when Michael wasn't even a part of that team? And it got me scratching my head, Sam, to where I'm at the gym. You know, I'm riding my bicycle yesterday just thinking, like, why did they throw that in there for Scottie, which was, quote, unquote, a bad moment? How did that come across to you?
You're right. I mean, yeah, a couple of things there. One is it was a Michael Jordan hagiography. It was, you know, a celebration of the sainthood of Michael Jordan. But that's what it was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be, you know, some sort of revealing, investigative, or challenging. It was Michael Jordan, you know, who many considered the greatest player ever, certainly in a lot of respects the greatest figure. I wrote another book five or six years ago on, to finish out my trilogy on Jordan, called There Is No Next, saying, you know, there is no next. This is the guy. You know, it's not, you know, Tracy McGrady or Kobe or LeBron. This is the guy. So I agree with that. And this was, you know, ESPN and the NBA and all these people for 20 years with all this film trying to get Michael Jordan to come along and say, you know, let's show it. So, of course, you know, it was going to be focused around him. And obviously with the success of the program, that's what people wanted. And that's what people were satisfied with, especially because he'd been so reclusive the last 20 years. And you hardly ever saw any interviews, but did nothing, didn't do public appearances. I don't think, yeah, I can understand the point with the 1.8. I also thought it was kind of unnecessary, you know, because Jordan wasn't with the team that year. But that's right. Obviously something the producers pulled out. I don't, you know, Jordan, from what I'm understood about it, you know, they showed him what they were going to put in, you know, about him and all. But, you know, he wasn't picking out use this or use that as much. And so, yeah, I think, you know, probably I can, if you were going to do something on Scotty Moore, actually, you probably should have done probably one of the most famous trash talk lines ever. I think it was the 97 finals at the beginning of that, when Malone was shooting two free throws to maybe win the game. It was a Sunday in Salt Lake City, maybe it was the beginning of 98. And Scotty walks by, yeah, I think it was the beginning of 98, and says, mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday. And Carl misses both free throws, and the Bulls win the game. So this incredible sort of in-your-face thing that Scottie Pippen, you know, his most famous lines, and he wasn't, you know, he's not a speaker kind of guy, but not a trash talker generally, you know, to come up with this, you know, because he and Carl were friends, both from the South, and knew each other, and, you know, it was sort of a joking thing, but it was like the great Scotty moment, that rivaled Michael's, you know, sort of last word trash talking. And they left that out, I noticed. So I thought they could have, but I don't think it was Michael trying to humiliate or embarrass Scotty. I think Scotty's feelings were hurt some. But, you know, I my sense was it was the producers because it was such a sort of a famous moment.
Sam Smith here on 95.7 The Game, former Bulls reporter for the Chicago Tribune, now writes for Bulls.com and the author of The Jordan Rule. Speaking of not being happy, Horace Grant. Horace Grant. You and Horace Grant seem to be close, and Horace, as we've seen over the last week, has not been very happy as Michael is being portrayed as a bully. What do you think about what Horace Grant has had to say? Are you side with Horace Grant here on what he's had to say about Michael Jordan in his so-called documentary?
I side with everybody because, you know, I knew that group. I knew everybody. You know, part of the thing Michael said in the documentary, and, you know, I sort of roll my eyes again. It's, you know, oh, Horace is the source of this. And, you know, it's just nonsense. You know, I've been around that group since Michael arrived. And, you know, I knew Phil Jackson from the CBA in Albany. I've done a story on him when he was there. Johnny Bach was from Brooklyn. I knew him when he was coaching the Warriors in the 80s. Yeah. And so I knew all these people and been around them. And but it sort of brings me back to that era because, you know, Horace was sort of a thorn, you know, with Michael personally. He didn't take well to Michael's sort of taunting that, you know, to some of the players would fall in line. Actually, Michael sort of liked Horace in that respect, you know, because Horace challenged him, like, you know, Bill Cartwright did at one time, and then Michael backed off, and Steve Kerr with his, you know, famous fight and all. You know, but Horace would come back at Michael and, he, you know, all that stuff was going on. But the credit, you know, of all those guys is, you know, as you saw with Michael, he was not always easy to get along with, you know, which was sort of the thrust of the Jordan rules that was shocking to people at the time because Michael, you know, through the advertising and the marketing and you know, is a fun guy with the media. Media loved him, you know, gravitate toward him and always, you know, favored him. I mean, I always remember I would joke with the players, like, you know, Horace would have a game of, like, you know, 28 points, 16 rebounds, and the media would all crowd around him and ask him what he thought about Jordan's game. You know, so it was always like that with all the guys. And, you know, Michael was just so much quicker verbally than Horace. He would be able to, you know, pick on him, get the last word, you know, much more articulate. As you've seen, and so Horace, though, was a tough guy. You know, came to the Bulls as like a skinny 195-pounder, built himself up to play all these Oakleys and Mahorns, played all the toughest guys in the conference, and, you know, ended up doing it well. He was going to go into the Marines had he not, you know, got his growth spurt and became a basketball player. You know, so Horace is a stubborn guy in his own right, and so. And he's very close with Scotty. Yeah, that's always the Scotty's closest friend. And I think what this is about is he's talking to Scotty. Scotty hasn't said anything publicly, hasn't said a single thing about this. And, you know, everything has been, you know, sort of forces, if you will. And I think he's defending Scotty. I think he undoubtedly is. I think they still talk almost every day. And so I think this is probably partially coming from Scotty as a reaction to some of the things Horace is hearing.
Sam, can you shed any light on Michael Jordan's relationship with Ahmad Rashad, just because, you know, obviously, and I kind of forget back then, you know, Ahmad Rashad was, I guess, working for NBC, but he and Michael had clearly a friendship. When did that develop, and how did that play into any, you know, was there any dynamic between Ahmad and the writers and the media covering the team and that kind of thing?
Ahmad, and I don't see him anymore, but it was really the most likable guy. And I can understand why, you'd like, he was always, personable, friendly. Because he worked for NBC, he had this access. So, he wasn't really a journalist, and I don't think he pretended to be. He was a great athlete. He played for the Vikings, was an all-pro receiver, and nice-looking guy, his famous wife. I think the Cosby Show,
sure,
the woman was his wife. So a celebrity kind of guy. And Michael, other than the security guys, he obviously, as you can see, didn't have many friends on the team. And, he really didn't have many friends. And it was, you saw later on with the security guys. And earlier, it was, a lot of celebrities. And, so Ahmad sort of, through an NBC stuff, like when there were all barriers, and being in the media, this is your press conference here. This is when you get to talk here. Ahmad would wander into the locker room with the team.
Right.
He'd get on the bus. I remember when Michael came back in '95. The famous "I'm back" and all this stuff. The team flew down to Indianapolis. That was that first game in March. Together, and Michael flew down on I think one of the corporate sponsors. Gatorade or one of those jets with Ahmad. We came to the game with Ahmad. Every Bill and the rest of the team came together, on their own. So, there was this. So we all sort of accepted it because, Ahmad worked for NBC, which had, the ultimate access. They owned the right, essentially. They were in partnership with the NBA, so he could go where he wanted, wherever. He obviously was, a friend of Michael. I don't know how close they were in the sense of getting together off the court. I think they did stuff. Because like I said, Michael wasn't socializing with his teammates. I know teammates who have said, and Luke Longley told me after he left the Bulls, he said, in the 3 years I was with Michael, he never spoke to me once off the court. So,
wow.
So it was obviously a different, a separation there. Steve Kerr would say, you could ask Steve, he said, the only time we were out with him in a restaurant is if we were in a restaurant and he came in that same restaurant. But of course, then he'd go to the back in a private area, with his guards right. And everything. So, but Ahmad's really a wonderful guy. I mean, I don't know him really well because there's a relationship. But you can see in the documentary when Michael was talking openly, in that era, it was always to Ahmad.
Sam, can you set the record straight on why the Bulls didn't get a chance at that seventh ring? I got chills when Michael was saying Phil would have came back, he would have came back. They would have had to convince Scotty, but it could have been done. I know Jerry Krause is not here to defend himself, and I'm just a guy talking on the radio. I do blame Reinsdorf, but you hear him say the effort was made. Tell us the real on why. What was the reality of that team getting a chance to come back?
I'll tell you the reality of it. It's a lot of nostalgia 20 years after or whatever the case might be. And that was a complete and blatant lie by Michael. That couldn't have been more than, there were several things in the documentary I saw, I would know, that he made up or he lied about. They weren't major things, but it was like, it's like when a TV movie comes on and they say, this is based on a true story. That's what that was. It was based on a true story. They had all the outlines of what happened, but a lot of the detail, like the pizza thing, the poison, that was complete nonsense. And there were a couple other things like that. I won't go into them because it weren't major, but the thing at the end was a complete blatant lie. And I know what happened was it was a lockout that year, 98, 99. And Michael being smarter than Phil too, they recognized, they saw this, and what they used, and they took advantage of Kraus a lot. But they both knew, and they both understood at the beginning of the 97 season that this thing couldn't sustain. Pippen, obviously, and Michael commented in this, which Scotty obviously didn't like, I guess, postponed the surgery, so he purposely missed the first half of the season. Rodman, as you can saw, was losing it during the season. I got to go to Vegas. I got to have a vacation. whatever's going on. I have to have relations with my girlfriend on the floor of the arena. Michael's aware. He sees all this. But what a great opportunity. To put Kraus on the spot again. Blathers this thing about Phil and 82-0, which was, Phil had made clear to the ownership, like the year before even, that he was done. He needed a sabbatical. And if you look also, Phil, you could see, was eyeing what was going on with the Lakers. They had like five coaches in 6 years. They got Shaq and Kobe. They can't figure this out. And he recognizes an opportunity there, you can see. I mean, he's not lobbying for someone's job, but he knows that he makes himself available. He's going to be the guy. And Shaq, now, by the way, has been talking to him already, urging him to coach him. So this is going on behind the scenes anyway. So Phil's leaving under any circumstances. And it was true. Reinsdorf had many times told him, look, why don't you stay around for the rebuilding? Jerry Krause is GM. He's an employee. I'm the owner. I decide. But Michael used it, I feel, all along as what an opportunity to one crazy motivation things to him. Yeah, they're going to run me out. I'll show them. So the season ends. He takes off, and then they have a lockout. And starting July 1st, you're not supposed to talk to players. But, of course, David Stern's not running Michael Jordan out of the league. So he comes in to meet Jerry Reinsdorf after the deadline on July 1st when no team was supposed to talk to any player. And tells him, look, I'm done with this. Scotty's, he's gone. Dennis is gone. All these guys, and Jerry says, it's a lockout. It might last a while. What? Just wait. Maybe Phil changes mind. Who knows what's going on? There's no hurry. No, I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to be around these guys anymore. I had to carry it down the stretch. Pippen couldn't play in the game six. His back was hurt. He's limping around. Dennis is crazy. If Michael wanted to stay, there was enough team there to stay with, even without Pippen or Rodman. First of all, Rodman would have come back for 1 year, no question. Now, whether he wanted him back, but he would have certainly. And you had Ron Harper, you had Tony Kukoc, you had Randy Brown, they had free agent money. Brent Barry, people forget, Brent Barry signed with him that year. They got one of the top shooters in the league to come. So Michael wanted to stay and play with a top team, or a contending team, that was still there. There's a possibility if he wanted to come back. They offered him the $38 million, whatever it was, for 1 year. And the whole coaching staff was still there. Frank Hamlin, Jimmy Rogers, Tex was still there. So this notion of I can't play without Phil, he went and played with Doug Collins 2 years later. So it's just Michael now. In an older thinking back, would have been nice being with the guys again. But back then, he cut it off. And the only one who ended Bill's dynasties in 93. Remember, in 93, he's the guy who quit on them. He left. Now,
right.
There were circumstances, extraordinary circumstances, but that was when they were great. Pippen and Grant were still there in their primes. They had all that, all that depth. That broke up the dynasty. If you wanted to talk about a fourth championship that they could have won, that was the one, and he left. And everyone's fine. They understood. No one was blaming him. But then to come back in 98, and I know what he did, and basically walk away completely when he didn't have to, and then to pretend that he was the one who wanted to play, and they forced him out. Whoever forces Michael Jordan out to do anything? It was such a blatant lie. But, hey, that's part of the mystique of Michael Jordan.
Real quick, Sam, we're up against it. We really are. We got to go to break here, but you said the whole Pizzagate thing where he had the flu game or food poisoning. Was it whiskey, bourbon, or the tequila that we sipping during the Last Dance?
No, he was sick. He was sick, but it wasn't, it wasn't wasn't pizza. I mean, it wasn't a poison pizza like they had come up with. Now, he wasn't hungover. You know, he obviously drank. He's sitting there with a cocktail throughout every one part of the episode. But the other thing, too, Michael, you know, for all the late hours he lived and he did, he stayed up and gambled all night with, you know, I remember the Dream Team with Magic till 4, and Magic couldn't stay up anymore. And then he was on the golf course with Chuck at 7, and then he was the best player on the floor. You know, he could do these things. He had this incredible constitution. You know, it's inexplicable, really, that he could. And more than that, you know, whatever goes on, you see guys now, and I don't know why they allow it. You know, he never didn't play. Well, I think he played 9 or 10 seasons where he played 82 games. He didn't miss a single game, and he came back in 95 till he left in 98. Now, of course, that might have driven him out prematurely. But all these guys who are resting and taking vacations during the season, you know, and have a hangnail and they take off several games. This wasn't Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan never didn't play. And you can see even that. He was legitimately ill. And he probably played 38 minutes or 40 minutes and hit the game when he shot at the end.
Right.
You know, and that really is what would be the inspiration to players today. You know what? You want to be like Mike. Go out and play the game. Stop sitting around.
Sam Smith here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.